Sonny Condell comes from Newtown, Mount Kennedy, County Wicklow. When he was a child, he saw the Vienna Boys Choir and decided that he didn't want to be a singer. But he did become a singer, a songwriter and an acoustic guitar stylist. One of Ireland's most noted modern songwriters, his presence has been felt for nearly 15 years. People have always looked to him as a distinctive performer and a lyricist.
His lyrics are like jelly, some of them, they wobble.
Yeah, I like him. You know, I've seen him before, and I like his wit. Comes across fairly well. I think he's a good solo performer, and he plays well with the band as well, as we found with Scullion. But I have to really check him out to find out what exactly he's like, you know?
It was on a farm, and it was lovely country all around it. And one song I wrote, I think, definitely had a big effect. The area had a big effect on that song, and that was Two White Horses, which is about looking at farming going on the other side of the hill, kind of thing, where you have a good view of what the other farmers are doing, sort of thing, and you can see that they're bringing in their hay. And you're bringing the hay, or there's a lovely feeling if things going on in a similar way on different farms and that sort of thing.
Two white horses draw the plough. From where I stand, I hear no sound. The hours of this creeping day in polished harness led away. Ploughman's feet in furrows, walking, walking. The years have bent this ploughman's back as wind deforms the skyline tree. Two white horses never tire in all the turnings of the day. Turning, always turning in this never-ending field.
I was playing with my cousin, and we were filling in for another duo who were meant to go down to Cork. To Carlow one night. And we went and we did this gig in Carpenter's Bar in Carlow. And in the interval, Leo came and asked to borrow one of the guitars, and he played. And we hadn't seen anything quite like it before. My cousin and I were quite jolted into wow, he's good, isn't he? And we were talking to him, and then we were talking to him about the folk clubs in Dublin that we used to play in, the Coffee Kitchen and Universal and those places, yeah. Which my cousin and I really liked doing, because people would sit down and listen to you. Otherwise our gigs were sort of ballad sessions and things, and Greystones we used to play down there, and that was great fun too, but it was a different kind of listening audience in the folk clubs in Dublin, so we came in quite regularly. And our songs that we wrote were sort of written specially for the folk clubs, really. And anyway, when we met Leo, we sort of suggested to him that he came up as well to play in these places. So he did, and he moved up to town, up to Dublin. Yeah, he went off to play with the Emmett Spiceland for a bit then. And he came back after that, and I was playing on my own at this stage. And so we were talking about... We could only go so far in Ireland, really, because of the lack of availability of places to play where you're playing original music. Leo Kelly and myself went to England as a sort of company for each other rather than forming a group necessarily, and we played in a bar called Bell in Norgate, quite near Liverpool Street Station. And that was a very exciting place. We used to play Saturday and Sunday nights, and for £8 a night, which was grand, really kept us going. And we stayed out in Ealing. And I used to play a lot of pottery drums, Moroccan drums and things like that. And there's a lot of Asian people in the bar, and they were really interested in the rhythms that we were doing. So it was a musically inspiring time, very much.
When they went to England, everything was rather dormant when they were signed, but yet then the bands like Jethro Tull, Steel Ice Band, who were on Chrysalis at the time, started to go a little bit more rock-orientated and had amazing success, whereas Tiernan Og didn't have the success, and the record company basically lost interest in them. And unfortunately, if the record company had had less success with their other acts and had developed more, spent more time developing Tiernan Og, who knows what could have happened. Because personally, from the gigs they did for me, the reaction was amazing. Everybody was happy with them. Everybody thought they were going to make it. Sonny and Leo were getting on very well together, which, as I say, didn't always happen. Sonny was using water pistols to squirting water on the audience long before punk had ever been heard of, and it was all good fun, and yet the type of material they were doing was so apt for the time.
If rain will fall, I am here upon the mountain. Grass will grow, and shepherds will be thankful, and our love will cover up all the mountains.
We made this tape, and we brought it to, first of all, Island Records, who we thought were the best record company. And that was a nice thing about working with Leo Kelly, because he always thought the most of the music, in a way. I always had a rather modest sort of attitude to it, but he said, let's just go to the very best record company we can. So we did, and they turned us down. And they suggested we go to another branch of Island Records, Chrysalis Records. So we thought, well, they only have very sort of heavy rock bands like Jethro Tull 10 years after and stuff. So anyway, we went along, and very quickly they said yes, they wanted to take us on for recording and management and publishing agency. So we were dancing down Oxford Street the next day, really delighted with ourselves. And I think we were given 50 quid each and told to buy some new clothes. So they started booking us out and do gigs all over the place. And we did a tour shortly after that with Jethro Tull around England. And we recorded our first album, which was called Tir na n Óg, which was probably the most successful of the three albums we made.
If rain will fall, high up here upon the mountain, grass will grow, and shepherds will be thankful, and our love will cover up upon the mountain. For time is like a promise, it tries all your strength to keep.
By 1973, Tir na n Óg had split and Sonny was back in Ireland. He was playing in Toners in Dublin, writing songs, playing with different musicians and planning what was to be his camouflage album.
Mulligan showed an interest anyway in the music, and so I started to work on the songs with Jolyon Jackson and Craig Boland. And we were really encouraged with what it sounded like. We just did some demos using the clavinet. Jolyon was playing the clavinet and Greg the acoustic guitar and my own acoustic guitar. And we had worked out some nice arrangements. And then in the studio we had Fran Breen on drums and Kieran Brennan from Clannad on bass. And the idea of that record, this was called Camouflage, the album, was to learn the songs approximately, for the musicians to learn the songs, and then just to play them all together as freely as possible without very many overdubs or anything, so the music was as live as possible.
You're out in the night so blue, your summer star down on the road of speed, a steady drive. I'm ending my day with you, so hold me close. I trust you will lay me down when time is up. I'm down in the city, you know where to find me. I'm down in the city, you know where to find me. I'm up on the top floor. I'm up on the top floor. Just under the moon. Just under the moon.
I'm very happy with it as a record. I'm very refreshed by it every time I listen to it, and I think it achieved its purpose in that respect. Like every album, there's a few duff ones in it, but my favourites are Red Sail, Down in the City, Backwater a While.
Well, as producer of the record, I look back on Camouflage as being a very ambitious project and probably one of the most successful albums of its kind recorded in this country. It's very hard to get records to sell in this country anyway. And there again, it was never intended to be a commercial album. It was very much in keeping with Mulligan's philosophy of producing good music, quality music, spending money on the production, and just relying on the fact that it was quality and not necessarily commercial to sell it. Looking back I suppose, as producer, I should have done a little bit more to remind Sonny of the dangers of producing an album that, in a way, deliberately was not commercial. I think that's a luxury people can't afford.
I like to hear songs that give me an impression of things without necessarily having to say it. I suppose the things that aren't said or the things that are hinted at give your mind more space to operate in as a listener. Do you know what I mean? So that's the way I view that album, as being a vehicle to take your mind away from just the things that normally occupy them into a space that is vague, and its vagueness is its strength rather than its weakness, to my mind. That's what I think.
Good days are getting longer. I'm sitting up in the bell tower. I can see a cathedral in a picture on a stone grave. They found me in the love days, tried to tell me she was evil. I understood the caution, my love was a burning bull.
Well, there was this strange thing. I mean, Sonny is very imaginative. He's a bit like a magician, I think, in musical terms. He tries to produce things out of a hat, and very often does. And yet, in his long songs, there's an element of austerity, you know, which is... which I think perhaps didn't work to his advantage in Camouflage. Again, I'm sort of thinking of that song in particular. Whereas he is, in fact, a very witty, very funny bloke, and perhaps we could have livened it up a bit more, you know.
But I still feel the same way about songs, that I write songs as they come out of me, rather than bending them into something that I feel the critics might like because they've said something about a previous work, you know? And yet you can't help but be influenced by everything that happens to you, because you can't, like, have... every action has its reaction, whether you've listened to the criticism or you haven't, you know, you react in some way. You either become further and further out in outlandishness and out of trend, or you merge into it or whatever.
I think there are some tracks on that album that do not date and never will. For example, Down in the City is a classic to my mind. I think that's a beautiful song, and it was, we were fortunate to get a very good version of it down.
I'm talking to the great old star. He looks down, notes down each word I say. Hurry up!
Down in the City is approximately about two cities and the feelings that they kind of left in my mind. Again, it comes back to the way I write songs, is that I experience something, and then maybe some days after, a sort of distillation of that experience comes out in the form of the words and music. So that was about Glasgow, which I found really impressively run down. We were driving through Glasgow, going to a gig, and there's these huge blocks that really, really looked like the gates of hell or something like that. And then it was also about the city of Los Angeles, going by the sea and driving away from people that I met there.
Night so blue, your summer star, down on the road of speed, a steady drive, I'm fading from someone's view. Trust you will lay me down. Time is up. Time is up. Time is up. Time is up.
The Camouflage LP, though it wasn't apparently intended to be a commercial success, sold very poorly. Sonny hadn't the consolation either that he might have got if the record had been critically acclaimed, which it wasn't. Instead, it was described as indulgent, too introspective, qualities some would say only singers from England or America can get away with. It was a depressing period for Sonny. He went to Holland for nearly a year, but resurfaced in late 78 to, among other things, renew an old friendship with Philip King.
Well, I met Sonny Condell first in UCC when I was attending that university in the early 70s, and Leon himself came as Tiernan Og to play there on two different occasions, and both times I was playing in a band that supported Tiernan Og at that time. After those gigs, I didn't see Sonny for years and years and years, and I came to live in Dublin then, and Tiernan Og had broken up, and I was working in a pub in Monkstown in County Dublin, and there I was behind the bar, and this chap comes in and asks me for a pint of stout, and who is it? Only Sonny Condell. So we got to talking and we struck up a friendship, which eventually became a musical friendship and partnership, and we set up the first Scullion just after that time. The people who were involved were Freddie White, myself, Mick Daly, Dan Fitzgerald, Eamon Doyle and Sonny Condell. It was basically an electric band, and most of the material was Sonny's. He was writing that time for the band in a sort of very new and inventive manner for that time. We played in Toners and Moran's Hotel and the usual gigs around Dublin, or the gigs that were around Dublin at that time. Nobody came, so the band sort of folded up and sort of fell apart. That's where I met Sonny first.
I got cold in my room with no heat for my heart, so I went out on the street and made myself. See the world, some girl maybe tonight, some girl maybe so nice. I saw circles of attraction, circular dance floor, circle of flies buzzing around each other. Some girl maybe tonight, some girl maybe so nice. I got a love call, love cry. Love call, love cry. I got arrows for my bow, I got a heart for a target. If the trees stop moving, I might just make a killing. Some chance in force 10, more chance of a sore head. I can't stop like a clock with my hands always busy, like a grasshopper rubbing his legs to get a song for a lover. Over here he said, come over here, he said, come over here, he said, come over here. We got a love cry, love call.
Sonny and I began to do a lot of gigs together. I began, for the first time, I suppose, really, to write songs. I was, as you know, interested in traditional music, and I was interested in modern music as well. And it seemed to me, especially like with things like the Bothy Band and sort of the whole revival of traditional music, and it was a high popularity at that time, that one should mix, perhaps, the various different strands of music that were in this country and try and form a new cohesive sort of unit out of it. So Sonny and I did gigs all over the place. We went up and down the country. Sonny playing the guitar and me singing and playing the harmonica was basically what it was. Sometimes it was very sort of high energy stuff. There was a real strong push off it for two people, and people around the country used to say, God, there's two fellas now with sort of just one guitar and two voices, and they managed to make a very strong sound. And it was because of reaction like that that we thought a band of the nature of which I was describing could perhaps be successful.
Certainly, sir. Is it in the city? Oh, yes, blazes boiling, said 10 minutes. The blonde girl handed him a docket and a pencil. Will you write the address, sir? Blazes boiling up the counter road and push the docket over to her. Sitting in a whisper, it's falling in belief. Yes, sir, I will, sir.
Yes, sir, I will, sir. Plays boy and rattle merry money in his trousers pocket. What's the damage, he asked? The blonde girl's slim fingers reckon the fruits. Raises boy and looked into the cut of her blouse. Took the red carnation from a tall stem blouse.
Sonny had a deal. This sounds like something very modern as well, but Sonny had a deal with Mulligan. I had a deal with Mulligan, so we decided we'd merge the deal and call it Scullion and get Greg in to be the third member in the band. And we did. And we asked PJ to produce the album, and he was at that time putting together the Piper's Rock album. And he knew Jimmy O'Brien Moran, who played on that. So he suggested that maybe Jimmy would be an added extra to the sort of music that we were doing. And so Jimmy came and we rehearsed and we went into Windmill Lane. I think it was the second album that was ever recorded in Windmill Lane, and recorded the first Scullion album.
She went a-hunting and found the barn a-blazing, and back she's come a-calling, a-calling, a-calling. Wake up, farm boys, the barn is burning down. Now the rats came out in the hundreds, and the cat she caught a-plenty. She's got the artful dodger, the dodger, the dodger. She spied him in the burning hay, the barn is burning down. She has to hide her face behind the rat she's eating, so as not to show a smirk and play to get a beating. As the farmer trips on his dungarees and he falls down the stairs.
My material on that album was very disparate. Sonny's was more, as always, was more of a unit. He writes to a pattern over periods of years. At one particular six-month period, he will write in a certain style, and then maybe if he records after that, he'll drop that style and go on to something else. So that was the first Scullion album, and I suppose everybody knows what happened with that. It sold very meagerly. It was released to some sort of critical acclaim, at least. People seemed to be interested in the sort of music that was on it. A lot of people said, you can't do this sort of thing. You can't... What is it? They wanted to know what it was. They said it was too disparate. How can you have a song like I'm Stretching in Your Grave, which is sort of a slow, highly identifiable as being a traditional dirge on one level, and a song of Sonny's like Pilo at the other end of the spectrum?
I am stretched on your grave. If your hands were in mine, I'd be sure we'd not sever. My apple tree, my brightness, 'tis time we were together, for I smell of and warden by the weather. Can't you see that I'm sinking, sinking? Just lightning rocks and flowing out on deep water. Pilo.
Thank you.
tied to the churning sea. Look how you left me, just broken in pieces. Pillow, look how you left me, just broken in pieces. Pillow, look how you left me, just broken in pieces. Pillow, look how you left me, just broken in pieces. Pillow.
This band was influenced other musicians more than it influenced, say, the general public. Do you know what I mean? I would say that there are musicians around the town, around Dublin and around the country, who listened to that music and were very much taken with the idea, and then maybe went on and experimented themselves. I don't think the public, generally speaking, well, I mean, the record would have sold if the public sort of liked it an awful lot, but I don't think, generally speaking, that they fully understood what we were at. A lot of musicians didn't understand either, but they saw it as going somewhere.
Well, I was doing this documentary programme called The Miners of Moaning Row, having to do with the Castlecomer Mining Quarry Union from December 1931 to January 1933. Now, it was a good story, and very riveting sort of stuff. And most of the story swung around a man called Nicholas Bourne, who was a miner down there, and a man of courage and integrity and strong beliefs, who set out in the 1930s to do something about the lot of the miners down there and founded this Castlecomer Mining Quarry Union. He was also left-wing. In fact, he at the time he was a member of the communist movement in Ireland. But I thought that to go with the programme, it would have been a good thing to have a song. So around that time, I was friendly with Philip King and Sonny Condell, and it came to me that it would be very interesting to see how Sonny Condell would deal with this sort of material. Now, I knew that he wasn't terribly interested in politics and probably didn't know a great deal about left-wing politics. So I gave him the tapes which I had at the time. Within about 2 weeks to 3 weeks, I would say, he turned up with this song. It was a good song because the story was a simple story, and the song he produced was a very simple song, just simply telling the story of these people in the 1930s fighting for better conditions. And he went along and recorded the song, and it was used in the documentary to link the story. But I would say that Sonny just approached it in the way that a sensitive, feeling man would to a situation like this, a situation where people were being oppressed and maltreated, and conditions were quite terrible.
A story of hardship now I'll tell, of the Kilkenny miner, needing his wits to keep from starving above ground. I've been buried alive, been buried alive down below, down below. Ballyragget was the first meeting place, and Nixie Foreign was the founder. A breakaway union for the miners themselves, to the dread of the owners and the priests, fear of the left.
On the day that the documentary was broadcast, George Bourne, who was the son of Nicholas or Nixie Bourne, and who had in fact followed in his father's footsteps and was the brand secretary of the Transport Workers Union in Kilkenny, where his father had been, was up on Blessington Lake with his two sons. And the sons were out in a rubber dinghy and they got into difficulties. And he went out to save them and he was drowned. That was on the afternoon of the morning on which this documentary was broadcast, and it was primarily about his father. Sometime afterwards, Sonny Condell and Philip King and the group Scullion were playing in one of the pubs in Castlecomer, and they would, I'm sure, have been unaware of the tragedy surrounding the death of George Byrne. But they sang this song in the pub, and they got the most amazing response because it was a huge emotional thing for the local people. This song sung about the happenings of the 1930s and referring to Nixie Byrne. But within the past couple of weeks, George Byrne had been drowned in the most tragic circumstances. So they got this tremendous emotional reaction from the people.
The boys, they were strong, for they stood on their own. But the bishop came down and did rant and did roar. And what God-fearing man can stand the wrath of his own church? And the union was crushed as the devil's own device. The devil's device. And that's the sad story of the Kilkenny miner, caught like a slave between hunger and shame, needing his wits to keep him from starving above the ground. I've been buried alive, been buried alive down below, down below.
I think Sonny is influenced by anybody who works with him. He's willing to expand his musical boundaries all the time to cater for what he would consider to be a good influence or sort of any other good music. He's an astonishing man like that, I find, because he's a player who has formed his own identity so much over the years and is identifiable as being Sonny Condell and nothing else over the years by an awful lot of people. In Ireland in particular, that when another musician, say like me or like Greg, comes to play with him, he's very eager and anxious to learn different modes of expression and different things, because sometimes he finds himself incarcerated by his own methods and his own sort of style of songwriting, which actually has become stylized and identifiable completely as his, and which in Ireland gets the reaction of either, oh, it's Sonny Condell again, or oh, it's brilliant. And he seems to have suffered from that over the years, unfortunately. I mean, in my opinion, he not only is he one of the most prolific songwriters in the country, but I would say some of the finest contemporary songs that have been written over the last 7 or 8 years in this country have sort of come from him, and never having received either the commercial or critical sort of recognition that they deserve, to my way of thinking.
And you're sleeping in the corner of the cab. When you waken up, we're driving into snow. And the driver's thoughts are driving us on.
Sonny will be playing music from now till the day he dies. He's that sort of a guy. He'll be writing songs and playing them with whoever wants to play with him. And he'll be bringing, I think anyway, a lot of entertainment, a lot of joy to people. I just know from working with him over the years in Scullion. both through the first album, the second album, touring in Ireland and on the continent, that the gigs that we did brought an awful lot of sort of enjoyment to a lot of people. And I think that's what Sonny, that's where Sonny gets his enjoyment. That's what he wants. He wants to stand up in front of people and play his music, and he doesn't want to be clapped in the back for it, but he just wants people to be happy or to see people's reaction to what he has to say. He wants to communicate something to them. What it is, I don't know. Maybe he doesn't know himself, but I think that's what he wants to do anyway. So
by the roadside, and you can hear them say, get in, it's pretty freezing. And you can hear them say, get in, it's pretty freezing. Yeah, 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 yeah. Get in, it's pretty freezing. And you can hear them say, get in, it's pretty freezing. And then we're on our way, we take it in, we make a little time. Well, how you feel about the road?
So I'm just trying to feel myself into new directions in that way, and writing with the idea of a band in mind more than an acoustic setup. So, and I'm listening to music, I think, with a greater degree, you know, just seeing what's going on. Listening to new music, I'm very interested in a lot of the music on the independent labels and things. I find that a lot of the songs I'm writing are very bleak in many ways, and I think it's very bleak, bleak times we're going through, and I think there's a lot of frustration in. It's so pointless, really, the mounting the arms race and all this sort of thing. It just seems like a very good reason for there to be sort of long, distorted chords on the guitar and people sort of... It sounds like people crying and moaning, you know. And, okay, a lot of it is maybe fashionable or something like that, but it is... The actual sound of today, it is today's sound. And it's not all cosmetic.
It's not in your eyes. It's not in your eyes. Family.
But those are my influences, if you like, at the moment. And if they turn out like that, they will. But it's really the way I think when I write a song and I play it with people and we work out a certain arrangement, it's very much how it happens there and then that I'm interested in, rather than a very formulated idea before everything. I think some people write in that way, which is not my style, but I think there's one called Cold Wind, which I've just written, which is about an underlying sense of unease all the time. And I think that fairly much sums up the... There's a lot of the lines are, you could say, they refer to it. They refer to something, but they use a different image. I don't know what the right figure of speech is. Simile, maybe?
And it's the first line is the open-ended season of the witch, and they fly by two, and down below in the city streets only stars they see.
Sonny Condell lives in Dunleary and continues to write songs prolifically, songs that reflect an abstract poetic view of the world.
I think of songs as an abstract art form, and music as an abstract art form, which is, I find very hard to talk about, partly because I'm fairly inarticulate, but how can you talk about something that is in itself gone before you can touch it? Before you can grasp it. And there's so many words in countless editions of the press and things like that, trying to describe music and tie it down. And that sort of builds up what are we going to call it? We're going to call it New Wave or Country and Western or something. And so much is built up around this, but really it's only just a spark when it hits you, the music. and there's nothing more to be said about it, really.
When I'm sitting by a window, I can see all the way across town. I'm dreaming, and with my finger, I'm drumming on the window.
Taking part with Sonny Condell in that programme were Philip King, Sean Davey, documentary maker Pat Feely and promoter Brian Kennedy. Commentary was by Dave Fanning. The actor, Cold Wind and Sail On, were recorded here at the Radio Centre with Fran Breen on drums, Tommy Moore on bass and Jimmy Faulkner on electric guitar and engineered by Colm O'Rourke. Love Cry, with Frank Kelly on bass, was engineered by Paddy McBreen. The programme was compiled and produced by Julian Vignoles.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.